it's just in Ethiopia. It is weird.
Because the calendar is different.
I never knew that. Even the time. The time is different.
Is
yeah,
it?
Yeah. So they're like 7 hours behind. And it's even a calendar is hard to adjust. But you know, it is. That's the beautiful about traveling. Mm. You understand, you learn, and you appreciate people's cultures. Oh. So I really appreciate it in Ethiopia. I had no idea, not until I was there. I was like, okay, do you want to meet me at this time? They were like, huh? I was like, what do you mean? No, you mean Ethiopian time? I said, what do you mean Ethiopian time? Then I had to understand.
Is it a normal 24-hour clock or is it?
Bro, they're like, their time difference is very different. And the years are different as well.
Yeah.
I think they're in 2015 or something now.
They don't follow the Gregorian calendar, which is the traditional one that we know.
Man, I wish I was there, man. I'll go back a couple of years younger.
Yeah, exactly. Let me get some -7 up there.
I wish, bro. I wish I could go back in time.
Yo, yo, people. Welcome back to the Root 401 show. Today we're joined by another special guest. He is the fastest growing YouTube channel for travel content. He is a man from East London. He goes by the handle of Black Man the Traveller. Thank you very much for joining us today, brother.
Salaam alaikum, salaam alaikum. Thank you for having me on. First of all, I apologize for my timing. I'm deep sorry. And first of all, I just want to say rest in peace to the people that died in Turkey and Syria. And yeah.
Rest in peace. And obviously, news just come out today. But on brighter news as well, I think we spoke a little bit about it off camera as well.
Yeah, yeah.
Congratulations, because you're going to be a father soon
Thank
as well.
You.
Yes, Thank congratulations.
Thank you.
How does it feel?
Bro, you know what? I was on the phone to my friend today, and I was like, I'm scared, because I've never had a child before. It's my first child. But at the same time, it's the right timing. And I'm gonna be very cautious of how I see life, because obviously now there's someone else that's gonna be part of my family, part of my journey. I have to be very careful how I carry myself in public, off public, and the stuff that I do on YouTube as well. I've got to be very careful. Mm-hmm. So I'm just gonna say it's gonna be a challenge, but whatever Allah gave me, I'm ready for the challenge, my bro.
I'm ready for the challenge. Obviously, I've been following you for a few years now.
Thank you.
I know you recently got married as well to your wife. She's from Argentina,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
So I'm guessing, are you going to be living in Argentina?
So basically, I'm actually moving to Argentina. I've been there before, because mm-hmm. like, we've been together almost like 9 years. Mm-hmm. But I'm moving to Argentina, but there's a 80% chance I might come back to the UK ASAP, because mm-hmm. I'm looking for a sponsor deal right now. If a sponsor deal comes through, I'm talking, you know, with certain people. But if a sponsored deal comes through, then I'd rather be based in London.
Yeah.
Somewhere in London, but somewhere discreet, you know, somewhere that's safe where I can raise a child. Mm-hmm. But I am moving to Argentina at the moment, yeah.
Okay. You were just there recently, right? Like a few months ago during the World Cup.
Yeah.
Must have been crazy.
Just off the bat, what was it like in Argentina during
the
World
Cup? You're going to hate me, but I'm anti-Argentinian.
The irony, right? Because you married someone from
there. I don't care, bro. I'm anti-Argentinian, bro. Like, every Argentinian game, I was like, please Allah, make them lose.
Why?
No way.
Were they too confident?
You
there?
Guys have not sat in a room with Argentinian people.
Really?
Mm. They like the French. They like, even the English sometimes, snobby, cheeky. Mm. I was going for Brazil and France. Like, my team, apart from England, if it's not the African team, then it's France, because France is made up of Africans anyway.
Yeah.
Rude, like the starting 11, the bench, the reserves.
Morocco, we nearly done it.
Yeah. I mean, I was rooting for Morocco as well, but obviously you guys made history. So,
facts.
Boom, you guys made history. But the World Cup in Argentina, bro, it was one of the most special moments I've ever seen in my life. They are so passionate. They are so excited. Even if when they lost against Saudi Arabia, I was like, wow, Saudi beat Argentina. I was like, okay, big up the Saudis. But when they lost, they were still passionate. Argentina is a special country, especially for food. I definitely recommend you guys to go for food and for football. Mm-hmm. It's one of the world's hidden gems. But I'm still anti-Argentina from this day. When it comes to football.
Okay, I was about to say, because your wife's Argentinian. But I actually had a question. So obviously, the greatest footballer in the world, in my opinion, Messi is known for drinking something called mate.
Yeah.
And I noticed in one of your videos, you had the mate drink. Do you want to actually explain what it is?
Yeah.
What's the benefits of it? Because so many people are interested in it. I am interested. One of our friends, he's a huge Messi fan.
Okay.
And he wants it. It's like a herbal something.
Yeah.
Herbal?
So basically, first time I went to Argentina was like 8 years ago, when I met my partner's family and her friends, and then they were drinking mate. And I was like, what is this? Because everyone's passing it around. Mm. What are you doing? I'm like, but then I thought, listen, I don't drink alcohol. Because mm-hmm. first thing I thought, alcohol, no, that's a red flag. They're like, no, it's not alcohol, it's tea. I was like, what do you mean it's tea? Mm. Like where I come from, we don't pass the tea around, my brother. Mm. I've got my cup, you've got your cup. I was very confused. But mate is basically, it's a herbal tea. It's not just located in Argentina, it's located in three countries in the world. Argentina, Brazil, and Uruguay.
Okay.
But it's more common in Argentina. It's more of a sociable thing. So when you go to your friends and you see them, when you go to a park, if you used to go to maybe like a restaurant, if you used to go to watch a football game, or just hanging around in general, or if you're going to be in your house with your family and friends, it's just basically herbal tea. You can either add sugar or don't add sugar. It's very complicated with Argentinians, but I add sugar, I don't care. And then literally you just drink it, and then once you finish it, you got to top it up with water, then the next person drinks it. Once that person finishes, you got to top it with water for the next, so that you're just passing it around.
Okay.
In the beginning, I was very, I was scared because I've got OCD, so I don't like to share my stuff. But as the years go by, I grew up, and obviously now I've got that fear of OCD. But Argentinian, mate is basically a Latin American herbal tea. That's the best way to put it, yeah. It is tasty, but it's not good for you.
Is it a seasonal drink, or they have it all year round?
All year round, but it's not good for you because it's high in caffeine.
Okay.
Ooh.
And I don't drink coffee, yeah.
Because Messi's always got it before games. Yeah. He walks in with that, it's like a pot.
Yeah.
With that little...
Yeah.
Thing
you get different sizes, you can get either small, medium, or massive, but that's high in caffeine. So maybe Messi is doing some magical tricks with that. Yeah.
The thing is, everyone copies him because he's got his own little design, it's like customized,
yeah,
got his name around it, everything. Yeah. I really want to try that. But if it's bad for you, only
you
once.
You can buy it here actually.
Mm-hmm. Can you?
Yeah, you can. They're in Brixton, there's a Latin American indoor market or whatever.
Okay.
There's a bunch of like Colombians or whatever, you can actually buy it over there, it's cheap.
Damn.
Yeah, and they even sell the mate things to drink.
Oh.
So yeah.
The thing is, nothing's better than having it in the origin of the country.
No, but it's original. Like it's imported. Yeah, it's imported. Yeah. I bought one there before. So there you go.
All right. I might have to try that.
Yeah.
Give everyone a bit of knowledge now.
Definitely.
I had a follow-up question for you on while we're on the topic of like food and drinks and beverages, like out of the countries you've been to, what's been like the one thing that you've never forgotten, like as in the taste of it or the experience, or like for example when you're in Argentina you told us how the tradition of how they pour the tea. Is there like any other traditions where you came across food that brings people together?
Man, food, Pakistan.
Okay.
Pakistan,
I don't care what anyone says. Pakistan and Turkey, but Pakistan number one.
Okay.
The food in Lahore, brother. One of the best food cuisines you ever get in your life. Afghanistan as well, because it's very similar to Pakistan. The way they eat food and they sit together. Of course, some places might be segregated, men and women, you know, but the way they unify together and they eat food, I've never felt so much energy. Like in the UK, I don't know, it's the only time I eat with many people is either when I'm breaking my fast and Ramadan.
Mm-hmm.
When you go to the masjid, or if you're going to go to your brother's house or your boy's house. But Pakistan and Afghanistan, the food is very tasty. And I felt very like... empowered and spiritual with the people sitting around me eating together.
Mm-hmm.
I knew nobody, bro. Mm. You go to a random restaurant and then they greet you. Like the hospitality that I had in Pakistan and Afghanistan was amazing. Similar to Turkey as well, but outside of Istanbul. Because I traveled towards, I was trying to go towards the Syrian border 3 years ago when I was starting my YouTube career. But my phone got stolen in one hostel. But I experienced some amazing journeys traveling through Turkey. People were so hospitable. I had some amazing food, free tea from a bunch of old granddads and that. Like, it was awkward. But in terms of food, the best food place I've ever tried is Pakistan and Afghanistan.
Fair.
Yeah.
Okay. If you had to pick Pakistan and Afghanistan, you have to go one.
Pakistan.
Fair.
Just because there's more dishes. There's more options.
True. Okay.
Just more options. Yeah. Yeah.
What would you say is like, what's special about it compared to the other countries?
The food, bro, there's
the atmosphere.
The energy.
Does it differ to Pakistani food made in London, for example?
It's way different.
Way different.
It's not the same.
Trust me. Because you know that shit back then, bro, is organic.
Yeah.
It's the meat from today's like cut.
Bro, it's way different. I've been to Pakistani restaurants. I've not been to Afghani restaurant, but I've been to Pakistani and I've been to Indian and I've been to Bengali. And out of those countries, I've only been to Pakistan and Afghanistan. I haven't been to Bangladesh, I'm getting a shoe, inshallah. But the food back home, it's fresh. It's like when you go back home to Africa, bro, there's nothing like back home. Mm-hmm. Soon as you go back home, the food is different. Yeah. The vibe is different. Yeah. The culture is different. Mm. You're enriched. You're enhanced. Like, you're with the people. Mm-hmm. Over here, we are too quick. We're living in fast times.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If that makes sense. Right, man. So the food back home, like in Pakistan, it's way different, bro. It tastes better. It looks better. It smells better.
Mm.
Yeah.
And now I want to ask you the opposite, bro. What's the biggest no-no? Like the food where even you can't have it, and where was it? And
ooh.
The one that you were like, yo, that one there, I can't recommend
it's
it.
There's two countries, yeah.
Go for
I'm
it.
I'm sorry, guys. No, actually, you know what? Yeah, there's two countries. Sorry, guys, if you're going to hate me. But Estonia is a no-no. I don't know what I had. I said to her, I don't know if it's on one of my videos, yeah.
Yeah.
I said to her, is this pork? She said, no. And she said, it's elk. I think it was deer. Elk. I don't know what that was, but I was fighting with this lady for like 10, like literally 5 minutes. I said, listen, sister, I can't have pork. No, it's not pork. I was like, okay, cool, whatever. But Estonia, the food is not nice.
Okay.
And then I'm sorry to my Latin Americans, but Bolivia is a no-no.
Okay.
The food in Bolivia is absolutely terrible.
Damn.
Everything's deep fried.
There wasn't a single thing that you enjoyed?
Just the rice and the plantain.
Okay.
The simple things, damn.
And that's in Bolivia.
Okay.
Shoot. Well, I just looked. Yeah, an elk is a deer.
Thank God for that. Because she kept saying deer. I was like, you sure? Yeah.
You're like, this kind of funny tasting.
Tastes funny.
Obviously, you mentioned that you were in Afghanistan.
Yeah.
When I first saw your videos in Afghanistan, I was thinking this could be a bit controversial because of all the news that we're seeing and everything that's going on in the media. What's your honest takes on Afghanistan?
First of all, I want to say to people is the media, people get paid to lie. On national TV, that's their job, they get paid to lie. When you watch the news, I don't know about you guys, but when do you see something that's going to be positive?
Rarely, ever.
Out of times. Like, how often you see something positive?
Probably when it's an important person's birthday, for example.
Yeah,
the Queen's Jubilee.
Yeah, that's it.
So I went to Afghanistan with an opposite mindset. I went to because I grew up in Newham. Newham's one of the most diverse boroughs in the UK.
Mm-hmm.
Probably one of the most diverse areas in Europe in general. We've got all sorts of nationalities. We've got a big Asian community. We've got a big African community and Eastern European community. I went to school in Forest Gate. The majority of people that went there were Pakistanis, Bengalis, Indians and Afghans. So when I was young, I used to watch TV. This is when I was blind, but now I'm not blind because I don't watch TV no more. But I used to see war, you know, in Pakistan, in Afghanistan. But some of my boys, like, I remember they showed me pictures of, like, Mazar Sharif, Bamiyan, Pakistan in Gilgit, Skadadur. I said, nah, man, that's not your country. They give it, yeah, it is. I'm like, bro, but this is what I'm seeing on TV. Mm-hmm. They give it, nah, bro, trust me. I'm like, okay, yeah. So as the years go by, when I thought, okay, you know, one day I'm going to go to these countries, but I don't know how I want to go there. So I got into YouTube 2 years ago. And then I said to myself, okay, now I'm going to do mainstream travel content. So the beginning of my journey was just like basically making videos, what everyone's doing. Then it was not until last year, January, I said, you know what? I'm going to change the whole ideology of Black Man and Traveller. I'm going to change the whole concept of my content. I'm going to go to countries where the media portrays that it's dangerous. I'm going to go to countries where people are scared to go to. And I'm going to go to countries where people are just, I don't know, like, I'm just curious about it. Mm. So I went to Afghanistan last year. I can't remember what it was, October, November, I can't remember. I went there with a different mindset. When I got there, I was scared, hand on my heart, when I got there. When I got to the airport, because I was the only person of colour, as a black man, I did see some other Asian people, but a lot of them were, like, diplomats. First time I interacted with the Taliban was in the airport. Mm. They just stared at me, and I just stared at them, but I didn't know what to do. So when they're looking at me, I'm just like, salam. They were like, they were just confused, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, salam. And then I had a bit of a joke with one of them. One of them had a bit of a sense of humor.
Okay.
But once I left the airport, I thought, oh, this is going to get peak because I just see people holding big guns.
But, like it's normal.
Like it's normal. But obviously I was composed. I started taking pictures just around the airport to say, look, guys, I made it. Da, 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 da. And then I met my tour guide. He was a bit of an idiot. And then we got to my hotel. Then we had Taliban security. So I was a bit confused. I'm staying in a decent hotel, but they were just there to protect like the general public. Then when the first time I interacted with the Taliban was when the next day I walked in the street.
Mm.
They were the most humblest people I've ever met in my life. Regardless of what they're doing, I understand they've got like there's pros and cons. There's certain things that I don't agree with them, but there's certain things I agree with them. Uh-huh. The only thing I don't agree with them is in terms of the women's rights, the equality amongst the two agendas. There are certain things happening between certain people that live in Afghanistan, and the Taliban are not really happy with them, or maybe they're, I wouldn't say, I don't know if it's they're killing, but if they're doing stupid stuff, that's the only thing I disagree with them. You know, the women's rights and whatever they're doing to other people. But apart from that, most of them are genuine. A lot of them want to see foreigners. So I was scared in the beginning, but gradually I started to lower my guard down. They're very humble. They offered me tea. I ended up in some of their houses.
I think that was the clip that we that went viral. I think that was the clip that went viral.
And then I ended up shooting a gun. I ended up
chai tea.
I hope it was chai tea. I don't know what it was. And then then I ended up shooting a gun, like one of their guns. Like they had the courage to let a foreigner, a Westerner, hold one of their guns and just shoot in the air.
Damn.
So I experienced a lot of stuff on camera and off camera.
Of course, yeah.
But it was one of the most interesting places I've ever been to in my life. The people are one of the most hospitable people you ever meet in your life, regardless of what they've been through. Afghans have been through war, my brother. They have been through trauma. They have been through hell with Western propaganda and also with previous Taliban regimes and Western regimes and that. But now, inshallah, things will move forward.
Yeah.
But they're very humble. If you guys go to Afghanistan, they will open you open arms, no doubt. Even if you're Muslim or not Muslim, they will welcome you.
Wow. No, that's beautiful, man. And unless you do what you do, bro, and actually go out there and experience it for yourself, it's very hard to change the narrative, change the picture. That the thing we're fed, bro, it's not even just news that we switch on. It's our phones. The first thing we see, you're swiping, a news flash. You're just like, yo. So you hear your friend going, oh, I'm going to travel to Afghanistan. You're like, bro. Did you have people tell you like, yo, like, I've please don't
warned.
Go, bro.
I've been warned a lot. I didn't even tell my mum. I told my mum when I got there.
Bless her.
No way.
I think it's a smart choice, though. Of course. Your mum would not let you
She'd
leave.
She'd be on the phone to MI5. Listen, my son's going to Afghanistan.
You lost it. Please stop it.
I didn't care. But I told her and she was just like, first she thought I was joking. I said, no, mum, literally, I'm there. And she was like, where's the evidence? And then I think I must have took a picture with some random like Afghan kids. She gives it, okay, you're there. Then she was like, just stay safe. She said, stay safe. She said, if you want to change the world, keep doing it. But son, be careful.
Respect.
Because you might be doing something that's going to inspire people, but at the same time, your life is on risk.
Yeah.
But obviously, I believe in Allah and I believe in my ancestors in Africa. They're protecting me. So I'm here. I'm alive. So yeah.
First, bro.
They might see that and they might welcome more people because they've probably seen the clips that's gone around. I'm sure they probably would have seen
I did see a couple of foreigners go actually, bro. I saw
there's another travel YouTuber. Well, he's not a travel YouTuber, but I think his name's Simon. And he went to Afghanistan.
Simon Wilson.
He went there and he returned the same day.
I saw that.
But he didn't say why.
So I don't really know the full story with Simon, but I've got a friend that's in, I've got a mutual friend with him. Called Backpacker Ben is another vlogger that I filmed in Pakistan with the first time. I think Simon Wilson was not comfortable with the rules and regulations. And he wasn't comfortable with, because when you go to Afghanistan, you need a tour guide. Well, you can't just turn up. That's suicide.
I'd imagine,
Like, if you turn up with no tour guide, no translator, they're going to send you back home. Well, the Taliban first, they're going to interrogate you because they're going to want to know who you are, like you're a spy. So Simon had a tour guide, but I think between him and his tour guide and the Taliban, things never worked out well. The Taliban are going to watch every move you do. It's their country. I respect that. They're going to see what your tour guide is doing, if you're not going to spy on them or blah, 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 blah. So I don't know what happened between Simon Wilson, his tour guide, and the Taliban, but I think there was a bit of misunderstanding and he wasn't accepting the rules and regulations that they were going to give him to able to enter the country.
So is that the tips you give people if they go? Make sure you get a translator, tour guide.
No, either one.
Oh, okay.
So if it's not a translator, it's got to be someone that can speak Farsi, Afghani. I don't know what other languages to speak there, but they're the main two.
Probably Urdu. Arabic. Maybe.
Arabic Urdu? And maybe
Urdu.
No, Urdu some.
Okay.
And there's like one of the biggest tribes.
Does it start with P?
Hazari or?
Okay, so it's probably. Okay.
Yeah, but if you don't have a translator, make sure you got a tour guide. If you don't have one, just make sure you got one or the other, because when you go through checkpoints, a lot of them can't speak English. And a lot of them can't read your passport, so you're going to be in trouble.
Yeah.
And that's happened to me quite a lot of times. I was scared.
Okay.
Yeah, I was scared.
I mean, you talk about being scared. I'm sure you get asked this question a lot, and I'm sure the answer might change quite often as well because you go through so many experiences. But what is the most dangerous experience you've had whilst traveling, and where was it?
Apart from the Taliban, I would say I had three others. So I almost got killed in Bahamas.
Oh, wow. What's the story with that?
This is before I was starting YouTube. This is like 2015, 2016. So I was always involved in making content, but I was scared. Oh, this was in 2015. I went to the Bahamas just for like 5 days, and then two guys were following us from like a hill. So they randomly met us in a petrol station, but I was buying like a pizza and some juice, and I was with some white guy from Zimbabwe. And then they were just like asking us weird questions, like, "Where you from? What are you doing?" And I'm like, "Okay, cool, whatever." Just responding. I thought it was like the normal conversation. Mm. And then we left, and then we had to go on top of a hill, and then we had to go all the way down to our hostel because I like to stay in hostels. So as we were walking, Sati just said to me, just turn around. So I turned around and I can see them. I thought, okay, maybe they minded their own business. They kept on walking, then they're following us. So we're walking up the hill, we've gone down, we take a right, they take a right. We take a left, they take a left. I think hold on a minute. Sati's a bit sketchy. So I'm saying to the guy, "Listen, bro, I think these guys are following us." He's like, "Nah, mate, it's all right. No, it's the Caribbean." I'm like, "Brother, you don't understand.
You still got to have your wits about
you."
Bro.
Yeah, yeah. I'm like, "Bro, I think they're following us." And then literally, we're just about to get to the hostel. And then someone just says, "Yo," like just says, "Yo." So I turned around, I got a scar over here. Someone just chucked a glass bottle and just, look, almost hit my vein. It cut me.
Damn. Oh, wow.
And then I just backed out machetes and I thought, okay. And then I just ran. I used to do 100 meters, so I'm quick.
Okay.
So I've got my pizza and I got my juice. I chucked my juice on the floor, but I'm running with my pizza. I'm running. But I don't know where the hostel is. So I just arrived at the hostel. So I haven't like memorized the area.
Was this in the middle of the day or?
Almost getting dark.
Okay.
Like 6:30, whatever.
Evening.
So the guy that I'm with, he knows the hostel because he's been there 2 days before me. So that's what I'm walking back with him to the hostel. That's what I'm saying. So as soon as I landed, I went to get food, walking around. I don't know the area, my brother.
Yeah, welcome to Bahamas.
Yeah, so all I know is just the name of the hostel, bro. Yeah, yeah. So I'm running with the pizza, I'm running. I thought, hold on a minute. The guy's a bit chubby. I thought, bro, he's going to slow me down. They got machetes. I don't want to get killed. So I was like, bro, as I'm running, I'm like, split. So we split. He's going straight to the hostel. I back to left. And then, so there were two of them. One followed him, one followed me. So I jumped over someone's garden and then I just like literally cut my belly. It was like barbed wire. Cut my jeans. I'm bleeding. As I jumped over, the guy couldn't jump over because it was too high. But as I jumped over, there's a dog like growling.
Oh,
like,
my God.
So I'm like, oh, man, kalas, game over. So I can see a dog. So I'm moving right. I'm moving left. I'm not trying to get bitten. Yeah. But at the same time, I'm holding a minute. Forget this. So I've jumped back over. So when I jumped over, the guy tried to jump. Then he left. Then he left me. So I've jumped back over. And then he saw me. So then I started hiding through the bushes. And then basically, like, nothing happened to me. Like, they left me, so the guy ran away. Second time, I was hitchhiking in Turkey. I got stuck on the motorway. One guy dropped me some wrong destination. And I was trying to get to Ankara. I know I'm weird, but I don't care. Mm. But I almost slept on the motorway. There was cars going past. I had to pay, like, £100 to get back to Istanbul. And it was, like, a two-hour drive. Damn. Yeah, and then after that, I would say the third time I'll say it was dangerous. I went to a favela in Brazil in 2016. And this is when I was starting YouTube, when I had the old GoPro Hero 4s. So I've walked up the favela. I said to my partner, "Come with me." She gives it, "Nah, I'm staying down here." I'm like, "Whatever, cool." So I've gone up and then you got to go past the police. There's certain favelas that are pacified. So police stand there with guns. The police officer even said to me, "My friend, No. You don't want to go up there." I'm like, "No, let me go." So there's me being all big-headed. Mm. I've gone up with my little GoPro Hero 4. As soon as I entered the favela, everyone's just stared at me.
Damn.
That must be so intimidating.
Bro, it was the most intimidating situation. So they just stared at me and I was like, "Tudo bem? Tudo bem?" Like everything okay? Like in Portuguese. Mm. I remember there's one guy, he had his cigarette like this. He didn't even flinch. So I'm walking deep inside. I'm just like filming. I'm like, "Oh, I'm here. Think quick." So I was like, "Okay, obrigado," like, "Thank you, Portuguese, obrigado. Literally, I just turned around and I just ran down the stairs. I didn't even look back. I just ran. But I could have got robbed, I could have got killed, but those are the three scariest moments.
Wow, interesting.
You've done so many things that so many people wish to do, and obviously there's going to be
like a movie. It's like, yeah, yeah. I was probably into it. Like, your life could be a movie. Yeah, like,
you could literally do one, you know, if you get your sponsorship. You never know.
Inshallah.
You might end up sponsoring with Netflix, maybe. Or, you know. But obviously, you first. I watched your introduction video on your YouTube channel, and I know that you said that. I think it was 2014 you met your partner. And obviously you first went to Australia. Mm. And then from there you met someone that told you that you should go traveling, and that changed
Big
your life.
Loretta. So I moved to Australia. I left the UK 2017. I got to Australia 2018. So I spent 2 years, 18, the whole of 19. Then I left early 2020. I went to Australia because I used to hang around with the wrong people. I skipped death numerous amount of times. I got stabbed twice. Almost got shot three days in a row.
This was in London?
This was in London, in Newham.
Damn.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Newham is dangerous, my bro. Now it's a bit gentrification, but it's still dangerous.
True.
But yeah, so I went to Australia. I was trying to find myself. My partner came with me. And then one girl called Loretta I went to school with. Big up Loretta. She's probably heard it so many times, but I don't care. But she sent me so many DMs on Instagram. She gives like, mate, why don't you start YouTube? So I'm like a person of colour living in a country where it is racist. Australia is racist. I've experienced it. But I was living in a farm and I was living with Australians and other expats from different countries. And then she goes, look, man, like you're living in a farm, like you're seeing snakes, you're seeing kangaroos, like the real Australians, like the Aborigines, the black people. Why don't you film it? I was like, bro, like, why is this girl bothering me? I left the UK to go to another country to find a better life and to change my perspective. But she's kept on DMing me. And I said, you know what? Those type of things I take seriously. Because when someone's doing that, it means it's a message from God. So I'm like, you know what? Something's up. So I said, okay, cool. Let me do some research. So I typed travel vloggers. I'm not racist, but the majority were white Westerners. Then I typed black travel vloggers. And then a lot of them were African-American. I thought, hold on a minute. Then there's only one person of colour from the UK called Lydia Dinger, big her up. She was she's a black girl, and she makes traveling content. She was the only British person of color. So within the black community, the Asian community, she was the only one. And I thought, you know what, I might as well do it. So my road name was called Black Man. If you know me, it was called Black Man. So I just added the traveler for marketing purposes. And then I remember I bought myself a Sony A7 II. But even from this day, I don't know how to use cameras. Started filming weird. And then I started just watching videos on YouTube, how to edit. Then I thought, then I left Australia 2020 because my second year visa finished and then the pandemic started. I had two options, stay in Australia in the lockdown or travel.
Yeah.
Then I went to Vietnam, started filming, but it was a bit materialistic stuff. And then my channel just changed when I changed my whole ideology in January last year.
Because your first video was in Hanoi, right?
Yeah, Vietnam.
Vietnam. And obviously the pandemic hit.
Yeah.
So a pandemic for a traveler is obviously bad because you can't make content.
Yeah.
So you can't make money.
Yeah.
What was the pandemic like and how did you adapt?
Pandemic was, I think, rest in peace to the people that died in the pandemic, first of all. And then I think the pandemic was an eye-opener for people that want to be business-minded. I think the pandemic, there's pros and cons, but it's benefited a lot of people in terms of a lot of people became successful in whatever they're doing. A lot of people started being successful in their businesses. It was a hit and miss for me. It was a hit because I kind of took the piss. It was a bit dangerous. I traveled in the pandemic. I went to Turkey, I went to Poland, I went to Sweden. And then when I came back, it was strict lockdown. Financially, it affected me because I got stuck in Argentina for almost 4 or 5 months. And then I came to the UK, then I started traveling here and there. And then I was making content, but I wasn't making money. People think I was making money. I was not. I started making money last year, February.
YouTube takes a long time to
monetize.
People
don't understand this, yeah. I started making money last year, February. Mm. So when I started in 2021, bro, I made no money. People think, oh, Blackman, you're rich. No, I got to be real. I made my first YouTube paycheck was 1,300 something pounds. And that was like last year, February. From then I said, wow, it's taking me 2 years to get monetized. But God works in mysterious ways. So it was ups and downs. I worked as a chef. I worked at the KP. I don't care. I wash plates. I done delivery jobs. Delivery, Uber Eats. So I had to feed myself. But at the same time, I knew my goal is I'm going to be successful on YouTube. But I just got to keep pushing. I know it's going to be hard. Keep pushing. I was delivering food for Stuart and Deliveroo. When I deliver food, I had business cards. Do you watch videos on YouTube? Yeah. Okay, here's your food, but here's my business card. Just when you get time, please just check out my YouTube channel. So I was hustling. I remember it was snowing last year, January. I still handed out business cards. The year before, still handed out. Even from this day, numbers don't lie. I'm not comfortable because I got 200,000 subscribers. I'm happy, but I know I can do better. And I think anyone that wants to be successful in life is don't give up. You can always be successful no matter what you're doing. Just have faith in yourself and be consistent. Yeah, but to answer your question, bro, like, yeah, I had ups and downs during the pandemic. I've done so many jobs, but I had to survive.
But that's the beauty of your job, you know. In order to go traveling, you had to do you know, people say the dirty work, they would say.
Washing plates, doing delivery jobs, make some money, fly out, praying to God that one video goes viral, come back, doing delivery jobs, flying. Bro, it was a myth.
Mm.
But it is what it is. It's the beauty of the struggle.
Damn.
Yeah.
Where does it stem from? That's one question I think a lot of people like. I've seen the comments under like viral reels, YouTube videos. People talk a lot about like your charisma and your energy that you give out, and even from like our discussion here, bro, I can tell that you're someone that when you put your mind to something, and whether it's like a dream, whether it's a passion, you're gonna go for it.
Yeah.
Where does that stem from? Bro, have you always been like this?
I would just say, I'll be real. I was always energetic, but I wasn't this passionate and motivational. It comes from two people. Nipsey Hussle, rest in peace, and Denzel Washington.
Mm-hmm.
I'll start off with Nipsey. Way before he died, I used to connect with his music.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to connect him as a person, music aside. Just him as a person, him as a human being, as a father, as a brother, as a friend. Even though I don't know him, but I had that connection, just the way he used to speak in front of cameras, and the way he respected people, the way he elaborated people. And I thought, bro, like, who's this guy? So we've got similar stories. He comes from rolling the 60s. I went to film in his neighborhood last year. I don't know if you know that.
I was about to bring it up.
Yeah.
Where they renamed it, right? Yeah. Nipsey Boulevard or something.
Yeah. So I went to film in his neighborhood. And but what Nipsey's been through, certain people can relate if you come from a deprived neighborhood. What Nipsey's been through the gang culture, you can relate if you come from a deprived neighborhood. You don't have to come from rolling 60s. You just got to come from a deprived area where there's poverty, drugs and whatever, blah, blah, blah. So I thought, you know what? But it's just the way Nipsey had a vision and the way he just kept on going on. Stay focused, motivate. Then the way he empowered his people around him.
Mm.
So my extra motivation and power comes from him and his ideology about becoming successful and how to use the tools around you.
Mm.
Second person, say Denzel, because I watch a lot of Denzel Washington interviews. Bro, the guy's powerful.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
I'm telling you, the guy's motive. Even on my lowest, I just watch one interview, I'm empowered again. The guy just, that he's very well articulated. He will give you advice, even if you don't know him, just by watching his interviews. The guy will give you advice about life, about just about being successful, appreciating where you come from. So those are the two people that empower me, Denzel and Nipsey.
Both legends in their own industries. Both legends, obviously, you mentioned you went to Nipsey Hussle's neighborhood. I was watching your hood vlogs.
Yeah.
It's very different to you visiting the third world country.
Yeah.
What's your experience like, obviously, going into the hoods and the ghettos of America?
So basically, I'm going to continue to do that, but on a separate channel.
Mm.
I don't think I'm going to put it on my main channel because I got a bit of a stick by a lot of people telling me, we don't want to see that. But I'm like, I don't care. I understand where these guys are coming from.
Why don't people want to see it?
A lot of people are not interested in ghettos and entrepreneurs that come from the ghettos or business people, single mothers that are empowered. People don't want to care, but I care because I can resonate. So I'm still going to do that, but on a separate channel.
Okay.
I'm going to make a separate channel. But my experience going there was, it was very educational. It was emotional at times. Just hearing the stories of the brothers out there, the girls out there, that what they've been through, people that they've lost, what they've had to deal with the police, the ladies that have doing things on the side just to survive. It's sad, but at the same time, I've learned a lot just by being there. But I've made friends with people from different neighborhoods. Like I went to Compton, to the Games Hood. I went to Jordan Downs Project where they film Men in Society.
Mm-hmm.
I went to Nipsey's Block. I went to 21st Street where 22 Jesus from. I went to Kumasi where Pop Smoke's from. I went to a lot of hoods, and it was dangerous. I did risk my life, but before I went to all these hoods, big up Hood Vlogs. He's one of the biggest content creators in the USA, and he goes to some of the most dangerous ghettos in America. So I sent him a DM. I was like, "Bro, listen, I'm coming to the USA. I want to film in LA." And he's like, first he ignored me, then he got back to me about a week. He goes, "Lord, bro, I've seen your content. When you come to LA, let me know." Mm-hmm. He thought I was joking. I bought my flight within 2 weeks.
Wow.
So, bro, I said, "I'm coming to LA." Then he's like, "No, you ain't." I said, "Hold up." Boom, showed him a picture of my. He's like, "Bro, that's what's up, cool." Never got a chance to meet, but he gave me connects in certain hoods.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And then every hood that I went to, I had to build a relationship.
Of course, yeah.
But I said to them, "I'm going to come and film, but just guarantee me two things, not three things. I'm not going to pay to film in your hood. So I'm not going to pay. Give me security in terms of I don't want to get shot while filming. And the third thing, make sure that my camera does not get stolen. If you can promise me those few things, I'll put up in your hood. I don't care if there's 200 guys over there.
Yeah.
If you give me security, you make sure that my camera don't get stolen, and I'm not going to pay, you know, money to film here.
Yeah.
Boom. So all those hoods I went to, they gave me that.
Damn.
Not big security, but there was just like two guys around me to make sure that I'm good. And I always met like the bigger people in those blocks.
Mm-hmm.
Every hood I went to Crips hoods, Blood hoods, I don't know, like GDs, BDs. I made sure that I wear neutral colours.
Yeah.
So when I went to Nipsey's hood, I make sure that I wear neutral colours. When I went to film for the Bloods, make sure that nothing was blue.
Yeah.
Like,
even, they take it that deep,
bro,
yeah.
Bro, it's deep. Even if you got a bit of blue in your shoe, bro,
what if you're bleeding?
But your blood is red.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Blue bloods.
Wow. Yeah. But like, so let's say you've been to Crips.
Yeah.
When you went to Bloods,
yeah.
Were they asking you like, oh, so what happens over there? Or they questioned
yeah,
you?
Yeah, yeah, they were questioning me, but they saw my platform. They knew straight away that I'm not gang affiliated.
Mm-hmm.
Neutral.
I'm neutral. I did film in some Blood neighborhoods and I filmed in some Crips neighborhoods and they were like, oh, like, why are you getting there? Blah, blah, blah. I'm like, listen, bro, I'm just a cameraman. I'm not a police officer. You can see my CV. My CV talks.
Mm-hmm.
I'm an independent content creator. So when most of them said, okay, no problem, like, I got respect for you because you, first of all, you're coming from the UK
mm-hmm.
to come to these hoods with no security. So it some days were a bit tense. Like, there was times when I was filming and cars were driving past and I just had to remain and focus because you don't know what can happen. There's times where I had to stop filming because altercations were happening, but it's part of the life of the journey. Yeah. But it is dangerous, my boy. America's no joke.
And obviously you've been to America.
Yeah, yeah.
And now obviously you've been to Afghanistan. And usually when you want to go to America, you have to do an ESTA.
Yeah.
And one of the questions, because when I went to America, is have you been to, there's like a certain list of countries.
Yeah.
Do you have any like problems with like visas to go into any countries nowadays because you've been to countries that they have on the blacklist?
No, I don't think I would because there's 10 countries that's on the blacklist.
Mm.
I've been to 2 out of the 10. Yeah, Afghanistan and Pakistan. But I think if I go to like, five out of 10 or 6 out of 10, then it's gonna be like,
okay, is that
a red flag? Yeah,
yeah, okay.
Oh, because when I went to Pakistan the second time, I flew from America.
Oh,
yeah,
damn,
I flew from Miami.
Yeah,
wow.
I went Miami, Turkey, Pakistan.
Because normally on the Esther it says like, have you been to like Iraq, Iran? Well, like, in like the past 3 years. Yeah. I think if you've been past 3 years, I think it's okay.
Yeah, I had no issue because the second time I went to Pakistan, wow. I literally flew from America.
They said, all right, see you.
See you next time.
Yeah.
Wow.
I think that's another thing you mentioned before about your charisma and stuff like that. I think when you go into these hoods and these like so-called dangerous places, and when people question you and they're thinking this guy could be fed, this guy could be a spy, this guy could be an op.
Yeah.
But I think once you tell them who you are, it's almost as if like, this crazy brother has actually come here to do what he's saying.
Yeah.
You know what? Respect. Yeah. Respect.
I had a bit of, even in Afghanistan, I had some Taliban members. Some of them thought that I was a journalist or I was a spy. I said, listen, brother, I'm not a spy, I'm not a journalist. Just check my CV. Like, well, if you've got family in the UK, just, I don't know, give them a call and ask them who I am if they come from Newham, you know. But there was sometimes that some checkpoints that were a bit suspicious because I'm not being, they've never seen a 6'2" black guy with a piercing and some weird Bantu turning up in their checkpoint thinking, no, I've come to film.
This ain't your usual
day. Yeah, this ain't your usual thing. Bro, some of the things that I see in Afghanistan, there's some of the Taliban members' faces, like they were in shock.
Damn.
There was even some people even touching my skin.
Yeah,
to even see if I was real.
Is he real? It
happens like that in Asia as well. You see a lot of black content creators go to China, and they take kids with, the kids will have pictures. Like the parents will be like, "Can I take a picture?"
Yeah,
because they've just
happened
never
to me in Vietnam.
They've just never seen a person of color before.
But you know what? I'm not gonna disrespect anyone. That's just a culture shock.
They've just never seen it. Yeah.
Because if they were to come to our part of the world, like if we, like where we originally come from, and if we never seen someone that's different, we probably might behave the same. So I respect everyone. So when people touch my skin, touch my hair, bro, I get where you come from.
Yeah.
As long as you're not doing it like intention, like in that, you know,
like
what
with
I mean?
malice,
yeah, intent, like, or that,
like,
intentions.
Or like being racial, I understand.
Yeah.
But if you're just like not used to it, bro, I respect you because it's a culture shock. So
You mentioned earlier on that obviously you used to do a bit of hitchhiking as well.
Yeah, yeah.
Hitchhiking like anywhere, and I was saying in hostels and stuff like that as well, you meet a lot of strangers.
Yeah.
That in itself, like even if you're doing it in the UK, it can be dangerous. Have you had any bad encounters with that, or it has always been a positive thing? Because I think it would be quite dangerous for a lot of people, no? Because you don't know who you're meeting.
Like, I got stuck in, like I said, I got stuck in Turkey. I actually hitchhiked in the UK 2 years ago with, was it 2 years? Or I think it was a year ago with a random Indian guy. Big up Panav. He's a YouTuber right now as well.
Yeah. I've seen some of your content with him, actually.
Yeah. So basically, me and Panav were doing deliveries, bro. It was during the pandemic. We were doing deliveries, working for Stuart. Uber was thinking, bruv, like, when are we going to change our lives? And then, this is when I was doing YouTube, like when I started, and then he wanted to become a YouTuber.
Mm.
So I gave him a business card, and he's like, yo. And then we just kept seeing each other, picking up food from like GBK, McDonald's. He's like, bro, I've binged the whole of your content. I'm like, okay. He's like, bro, I want to become a YouTuber. I'm like, okay, do it. But I'm still here delivering food, so I'm still like juggling with life. And then I told him, bro, next week I'm going to hitchhike from Colchester to Newcastle. Do you want to come? He's like, no, that's dangerous. I'm like, okay, no problem. And then he sent me a message on WhatsApp. He gives it, bro, I want to do it.
Yeah, respect.
Boom. We met up at Stratford. We took the train from Stratford to
Colchester.
From Colchester, we started hitchhiking. Bro, it was the weirdest experience in the UK. You got a brown man, you got a black man sticking at their thumbs. People were giving us racial slurs.
Oh,
but,
is it?
But not over here. When we got to Durham.
Okay.
And then we got, it was Doncaster and Durham. But they wasn't being racist towards me. They're being racist towards him.
Okay.
That was the first time he's ever had a racial confrontation in his life.
Damn.
He's a quiet boy, bro. All he does is study. He's got his student visa. And then he just does, like, delivery food on the side. So when I saw that, I thought, hold on a minute. Nah, man, I'm going to step in. So we was in Durham. And then there was a bunch of kids. I'm gonna call them kids. Like three guys and one girl. One guy was driving. There was a girl in the passenger seat and two guys in the back. And they were just saying, "UP, UP, go back to your country." And then I was like, "No." I said, "What did you say?" "No, we're not talking to you. We're talking to him." I said, "Brother, if you're talking to him, you're talking to me, because he's right next to me." Yeah. You know what I mean? They're like, "What? What do you mean?" I said, "Brother, like, what do you mean UP? Come here." And then he was like, "No, I don't want to fight." I said, "Brother, listen to me. See where I come from? Someone calls you a racial word, you got to stand up against yourself." So I was defending him. That was the one of the scariest things I had hitchhiking in the UK. Then we went to Doncaster. And then we went past some pub. I'll never forget this. My God, there was like a Union Jack flag. Oh. And then everyone was all drinking beers.
First red flag.
First red flag. Bro, the Asian guy was like, "Brother, I think we should go." I said, "Nah, we have to." Because we had to go past there to get to the other side to hitchhike. We couldn't go the other way. Bro, the other way could have been
It's like
water.
A movie. It's literally like a movie.
We couldn't go the other way because God knows what we could have encountered in that journey. So I said to him, "Bro, stay where his cameras are. We got to go past this English lot." So literally walking past the pub, and then he's got like a board that says hitchhiking. Da, da, da. So he's got like a backpack. I've got a backpack. I'm wearing odd socks. I'm looking like a weirdo. Bunch of British people. I remember one guy had his beard just like this, just staring at me, drinking his pint. He's like in shock. So I was like, "You all right, mate?" He's like,
"Someone's like, how dare you?"
Yeah. But I was taking the piss. I was like, "You all right, mate? You guys, you what?" I'm like, "Brother, where's the blah, 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 like this road so we can hitchhike?" "Yeah, go around the corner." Da, da, da. But the way it was a pub, but they had an outdoor section.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone just stared at us. It was the most awkward situation. But you can tell it was racial. Because we was in a place where Union Jack, Union Jack, Union Jack, UK, like English flags everywhere.
Yeah.
And the majority were just full of white people.
Mm.
You see two people of colour walking past a pub.
Hitchhiking.
As
well. Yeah.
That was a bit intense. I just laughed the whole situation.
It's crazy.
I've never done hitchhiking before.
Try it.
Maybe we should one day. Maybe we'll try go on a journey with you one day.
Oh, let's do it. Let's do it.
Would you ever do that? Would you ever, like, you know, one day your subscribers get like 10 people and you go on a journey together and you film it? That could be a cool little journey.
No, I just came from Ethiopia. I was with one American guy who's a subscriber, and he's a sort of becoming like a YouTuber.
Mm.
And first I contacted him. I was like, "Bro, like, I like your content." Da, da, da. Then he's like, "Yo, bro, I'm coming to Ethiopia." I'm like, "Okay, cool." So we just traveled together to Ethiopia.
Mm.
And he was the guy that I went to Somaliland with.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't mind traveling with my subscribers as long as you got to be street smart.
Yeah.
And you're not going to like get me killed. Like, you know what I mean? Because I can't tell your energy. But if you're comfortable, if you're comfortable in your skin,
mm-hmm.
you're proud of your skin, like, in case you have any altercation.
Yeah, know how to get out of it.
Yeah. And as long as you're street smart, bro, I'll travel with you.
Mm.
Yeah.
Mm. I want to get into like your thought process and your mind in some of these scenarios. So I was watching, I've watched a video of one of yours.
Yeah.
But the camera was off for majority of it. So it was pitch dark.
Yeah.
It was a very tight space and you're on a sleeper train.
Yeah.
The video's only about 40 minutes, I'd say. But you were there for about 16 to 20 hours. What was that journey?
Was that
like?
India? I think it was India.
It was in India. So what's that journey like in a sleep? Because we only see 40 minutes. Yeah. What happened for the rest of the 15 hours that you were on that train?
I had the deli belly, bro. I don't know if you guys had the deli belly.
But on a 16-hour train.
I mean, I'm Asian. I'm used to it.
But you don't want to get that, man. What are those pills that you take and then like, you can hold your...
I don't know.
There's like some pills you can buy, and then if you take it,
stops you shitting.
Yeah, it stops you shitting for a certain period of time.
I can't lie. I try to remember the name.
But you know what I mean.
Just call it the opposite of laxative.
I think because I've grown up on this type of food, like my body's just used to it, so I've never had to. So like,
no, but sometimes you should buy it when you're traveling. Because I bought that when I went back home of the summer.
So basically, those pills. I don't really believe in pharmacy. I'm very weird. I'm very skeptical in what I take. Yeah. So, I should have took those pills. But bro, my belly was gone. When I mean gone, I ate something and I was bad. But the people on the train made the journey so beautiful because I met some very interesting, odd characters. But it was interesting because I met so many people. They were very polite. But the way the train was going so quick and my belly was not adjusting to the train.
Yeah.
And then the toilet was a bit of a problem. So I thought, oof. But it was an interesting journey.
So wait, was the toilet not working the whole time you were on that?
I couldn't use the toilet. Let's just say that.
Was it one of those...
Or just dirty.
Yeah.
Okay.
Basically, yeah. That's a
hygiene and stuff.
Hygiene.
Okay.
I couldn't use it. Plus, there was no toilet roll. There was only water, and I didn't have my sanitizer. Wasn't enough to keep on. Yeah. So I thought, let me just hold it down, and
the whole journey down.
Bro, I hold it for 16 hours, bro. Or crazy. I think it was 16 hours. Yeah.
Probably longer because you have to get off the train with all your stuff and all that as well.
But it was a good experience because those train journeys, I saw the diversity of India. Each province and city is different. It's blessed with natural beauty. There's so much cultures and religions and different people. So it was a very interesting journey. Even the people just sitting in the carriage, in my carriage, we had some funny conversations and it was beautiful.
One thing I really enjoy about your content and how it's difficult, because I follow a lot of like travel content YouTubers and it's normally like, what $5 can get you in India or something. But your content is nothing like that. And especially when... you visit these places and you visit the people. It's very raw and you're fully interviewing people that live in the land, not celebrities and whatnot, but it's people that live in the land.
Yeah.
One thing that I enjoy about your content is you're so confident in giving children your camera. These are kids that that come from nothing. They could easily steal from you as well, but they don't. And one thing I noticed, I think it was in in Pakistan that you did this in. There was a little girl you gave your camera to, and she's literally...
Assalamu alaikum, Fatima. Her name is Fatima.
She's just running around with the camera, singing songs and showing all her friends. But I could see you in the background, and you're not even like watching over them. You're with the tour guide and just having a conversation. Yeah. Like, and that's what I find very wholesome about your content. But I think a lot of people, if they were in your situation, they would be a bit skeptical about just handing their camera to a little kid.
You know what? First of all, Fatima Salam. Her brother Ali, salam alaikum, because you know what? So, you know that story. It's so weird. So basically, I was trying to hitchhike. As I'm hitchhiking, I got her brother come next to me. He's like, "Yo, where you from?" I'm like, "London." He's like, "Yo, what are you doing?" I'm like, "Hitchhiking." He's like, "Why?" I'm like, "I don't know. I just want to hitchhike." He's like, "Oh, what is this?" I'm like, "It's a camera. Say hello, salam, boom." And he's like, "Can I come with you?" I'm like, "How old are you?" He's like, "Oh, I'm like, da 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 da. I think it's like 18, 19." I'm like, "Bro, like, I'm hitchhiking. Do you understand what I'm doing? Like, it's dangerous." So he's like, "Yeah." He's like, "Are you a YouTuber?" I'm like, "Yeah." He's like, "Oh, I've got a YouTube channel. Show me." Okay, so he showed me. Cool. Boom. Started filming. We just hitchhiked. Boom, boom, boom. Dropped to some random area. And then some random guys picked us up. And they were YouTubers. And then we connected. And I exchanged my number. So I kind of trusted him. And then he met me the next day. And he's like, "Yo, bro, do you want to hitchhike again?" Cool. So we hitchhiked. And he's like, "Do you want to like come to my family's house?" I'm like, "Oh, that's a bit weird." Okay, you know. Might as well. I trust him now. And then I saw his sister. And then they were just so happy to see a foreigner. They've never seen a black man before. They were just staring at me like this. I thought, you know what? This girl's got so much energy. So when I was filming, first I had the camera in the beginning. I said, you know what? Forget this. I said, listen, come here. Take the camera. Say whatever you want. I don't care if you speak Urdu. I don't care, but just speak. But be free. So when I gave him a camera, I said, first of all, please don't drop it because that's going to make me money. I said, listen, hold the camera like this. But the way she expressed herself, There was a similar story when I was in Pakistan. I went to an all-girls school. And then I just, some random guy stopped me, said, look, come. Then I filmed. And then there were so many beautiful girls over there. But they were just beautiful in terms of like they were free spirit. Mm-hmm. And then I gave them my camera and I was talking to the teacher. I had no idea that these girls were the most intelligent girls I've ever seen. I had no idea that they were singing the Pakistan national anthem. Mm. I even cried watching that video after.
Damn.
And, so you didn't know what they were doing with the camera? I saw
it after.
Okay.
Because when I was with the two guys, they were like, black man, I think you need to watch this thing. I think something special happened. Bro, we all sat down drinking chai tea and we all cried. They were like, what? And I said, this is why I should do traveling content. Mm-hmm. This is the content that the world needs to see. Mm. So to answer your question, why I give people my camera, because you need to understand, these kids are the next future, not us. Mm. I know it sounds rude, but we're going to die in maybe like 30, 40 years. If you live longer, God's with you.
Yeah. Mm.
But these kids are the next future, so give them the opportunity. Mm. These kids are probably never, ever going to have a chance to hold a camera. Mm-hmm. They've never seen a camera before, just on TV. So you doing that one thing to give them the camera, you are going to help them.
Yeah, it's a small gesture from you. But for them, you might inspire them. Yeah,
it's something big. So that's why I give people the camera. And I say, you know what? Any country I go to, I've even got my African videos coming out soon. I gave a bunch of kids my camera. I said, just don't drop it. As long as you don't drop it, I don't care what you do. You can swear whatever. Be free. Be free. So that's why I give my camera. And I think once you give the camera to kids especially, it shows a different side towards you. Because a lot of these vloggers, they go to countries like Pakistan, Bangladesh, Morocco, Somalia, and they will exploit people. Mm-hmm. They'll do these videos, what can you get for $10? Or best shoe cleaner gets $100. Bro, that's exploiting. Mm. But they don't know it. They're exploiting our people, my brother. Mm-hmm. So you're going to give someone $100 just for cleaning your shoes? Mm-hmm. Are you kidding me? What are you going to pay him $100? What then? But the cheek, you have to pull it on camera to show that you're some
charitable.
Bro, come on, man.
Yeah.
So that's why I don't make that type of content. I believe to stay authentic and I'm different.
I had a similar experience when, 2 years ago I went to Kibera, Kibera slums in Kenya.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
He's brave.
You know what? I don't think you'd remember this, but that's how I actually came across your channel.
Yeah.
I uploaded a video on Instagram of my experience in Kibera and you actually commented on it.
Did I?
Yeah. You won't remember it. This was years ago. I'm talking about 3 or 4 years ago.
Yeah.
I think this is when you first started YouTube, because when I subscribed to your channel, you only had 3,000 followers.
Yeah. Yeah.
And obviously now it's skyrocketed, and I was like, oh wow, like this guy's gone huge. Like, obviously, I'm sure you're aiming for something higher as well.
Yeah.
But when I was in Kibera, I noticed that, again, similar to what you said before, on the news, it scared me a little bit, because I knew the rebels were fighting back against the government, and there was loads of going on. Yeah. You hear a bunch of stories as well.
Yeah.
But then when you go there, you meet the nicest people in the world, and especially the kids.
Yeah.
It's so wholesome to see how when they see you, it's just smiles, because they've never seen a phone before. They've never seen a camera before.
Yeah.
So to them, they're like, yo, we're going to be on TV, or we're going to be in this. We're going to be, they're excited, right? Mm. When you go there, what do you feel? Like, because for me, I felt a sense of fulfillment.
Why did you go
meeting
there?
Those kids? I went with a charity.
Okay.
So I fundraised for a few schools. I fundraised for the slums. A lot of it was to do with hygiene as well. The one thing that a lot of people don't consider as well when they do charity trips, everyone just wants to build like schools or mosques and things like that. But people don't think about building toilets in these situations, because that was one of the main things for that community. Hygiene was very poor, and obviously a lot of people catching diseases and stuff like that. So that was one of the main reasons we went there.
Yeah.
Obviously, initially we were scared. We had like a police escort with us as well, because we came with a charity.
Oh, wow, you got
so scared. obviously very different to your type of content as well, because obviously you're going by yourself.
Yeah.
How did that feel, obviously going into the Kibera slums and other African slums that you've been to?
Man, Kibera first, that's what I said, first thing to Kibera, I said, wow, that's dangerous, because I thought it was dangerous. It is a bit dangerous, but not as dangerous as it is.
Mm.
But when I went there with... I literally just went there with like, there was like 5 of us, but we split. So I was with one Italian guy. He went one way with his tour guide, and then I stayed with my tour guide. And then there was another guy. He was a bit annoying, but I thought, okay, he might as well just come anyway because we're there. And then, but it was interesting, because I think it's one of the biggest slums.
It's the biggest slum in the world.
Yeah. And then just the amount of people that are living there, bro, first of all, the conditions are very bad.
Mm.
The part that I saw. But the government of Kenya are trying to refurbish and rehouse certain people. I did see some new buildings, but the conditions are bad. Mm. Second of all, the people that I met over there, they, once again, very hospitable, very understanding. Yes, you do get some pickpockets.
Mm-hmm.
I did see some people, but I'm very street smart.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I got PTSD. So someone that's walking very close to me, I'm turning around straight away.
Yeah.
Like, what's your reason walking next to me? But they're very hospitable. But in terms of the people, it's the people are very, they're very unique, because I met hustlers, I met rappers, I met people that have studios, I met people that recycle stuff from all the toxic garbage that they have. I met so many little kids that want to be inspiring people. So that's like, I gave my camera again to the younger people. But Kibera Slum was an eye opener, because the last time I went back home was about 7 years ago or 6 years ago. And to go to Kenya, like, I'm not from Kenya anyway, but my mum's Ugandan and my father's Tanzanian Rwandan. But just to go back home in general, it was an eye opener, because I've humbled myself. I appreciate what I have. Because we're in the studio with cameras, you've got a nice jacket, trainers. These kids don't have this.
Mm-mm.
You're going to go home to a nice warm bed. These kids are not going to go to a house that is warm and comfortable. There's some houses I went to, there's like leaking.
Yeah.
The roof is gone. So, but
these are houses made out of like tin and stuff like that.
But you know what smacks it? They invited me over to their house. And they offered me food.
Yeah.
They're the happiest people in the world.
And they're the happiest people. And I'm just thinking, and guys over here are complaining about, oh, it's raining. Bro, guys here complaining about, oh, the prices went up. Oh, they stopped giving furlough. Oh, man, it's expensive. McDonald's is expensive. Oh, JD, bro, there's people out here that don't have nothing.
That's what we call first world problems, isn't it, bro?
You know, people would die to be in our shoes right here. A lot of these people are very educated, but they don't have the financial needs. So to go to Kibera to answer your question, it was an eye-opener. I've humbled myself. I'm definitely going to go back. I'm planning back to go back to Africa next year, inshallah, and I'm definitely going to go back to that slum, because I built a relationship with some people that own a studio.
Nice.
Yeah, they own a studio, but they're giving it back to the younger people.
Dope.
Yeah, to like young rappers, musicians. Yeah, man, it was... very inspiring, Kibera Slums.
I think that's what I was trying to get to, because obviously when the kids see you and meet you, for them, that's a memory that when they grow older, they're going to talk about it. Like, oh, there was this one time this guy came from London and we had fun with him. We played with his camera. We did this, we did that. One thing that stood out to me a lot was there was kids playing with a tire and they looked like the happiest kids in the world. Whereas comparison to here,
everyone's on their phones.
Where we have quite a lot of things, but no one is nowhere near as happy as them that have nothing.
We always want something more, innit?
Yeah,
that's a fact.
That's what you said. You have to humble yourself sometimes.
Humble yourself.
You have to experience what some people don't have, and then when you come back, sometimes it changes a person.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So, but what country? This is the last question from myself.
Okay.
What country, like, would you recommend for people who have never travelled? Would you say, or let's say top three countries to visit, it's a must, you should try and experience in your lifetime?
Top three countries to visit. Pakistan, one. Afghanistan, two. Those are eye-opener countries. The third one, I would say Australia. I know it sounds weird. Australia is very beautiful.
Where it all began.
Yeah, where it all began. Australia's got everything, my bro. It's got everything. It's got beaches. It's got natural beauty. Yeah, you're in the middle of nowhere, but who cares? You got everything you want. It's close to Southeast Asia, so I'll say Pakistan, Afghanistan, Australia, and then two more I would say USA. No, because
Estonia or anywhere. Bolivia.
You know what Poland.
Oh yeah,
really?
Because I've been to Poland. Poland is very beautiful.
Warsaw.
Yes. Very beautiful. I would say fourth one would be Poland, and then the fifth one I'll say, I know there's war right now, but hopefully things will change, at Myanmar. I went to Burma, Myanmar. That was an eye opener as well. Very hospitable, very raw. Not too many foreigners go there, so those would be my top five countries.
Okay, there is one country. Yes, it's like, it's near Russia. Is it Moldova. Or Mongolia? There's one there where it's very hard to get in.
Chechnya.
I think it's that. Someone visited there because there's a football team that was there that was in the Champions League. It's very close to Russia, very close, and it's very hard to get in, and it's got the old Soviet Union type of vibe to it.
It must be Moldova.
I think it's Moldova.
I want to go there.
I was about to say, are you going to try and go there?
I was meant to go there, but my bag got stolen.
Oh.
It never got stolen, but it got lost, but I am going to Moldova, and I'm planning to go to Russia as well. It's on my list. I'm going to break the
stereotype of Russia at the moment.
I mean, even though Russia, we know what's going on within Russia and Ukraine.
Yeah.
However, I'm not sure if you watch like other YouTubers, but the Nelk boys themselves, they went to Dagestan recently.
Yeah.
And they had a similar encounter to you where they were held up at the airport for 2 hours.
They went to Dagestan?
Dagestan, yeah.
They met Hezbollah, right?
Yeah, they wanted to meet Hezbollah. They wanted to see Islam.
Guys are brave.
Bro, they wanted to go there.
They're big, they're huge.
And no, but that still did not stop like the authorities stopping them, because realistically to them, they were like, bro, Dagestan's such a small country. No one comes. Like for five,
it's
six Americans.
It's a small
city.
Country.
It's a small city within
Russia.
Within Russia, thank you for correcting me. And they were held up for like 2 hours, and they kept getting asked questions like, are you a spy? Like, because they're just seeing all these young American boys with American passports. Like, and then after getting interrogated and them having to call like their guide, their tour guide and everything, it got patterned out. But they were like, they walked out and they went, yo, that was the most scariest 2 hours of our lives. But at the end of that trip, these boys are known for like going abroad, partying, sending wherever they go to. But they said that trip there, where they were in rural Dagestan, where they're having tea, they're doing high altitude sprints. They weren't drinking because there's like strict policies in certain parts of Russia. And they appreciate it a lot. And they're like, bro, I want to do more stuff like that. And I think it's an eye opener to the normal person.
They said it was their best ever trip they've done. That's, and they've been everywhere.
Everywhere, and they've been a lot of places.
That's the beauty of travelling, isn't it?
It's life-changing.
Yeah.
Because you go to somewhere, you have a different type of split image, but once you get there, you're thinking, well, it's not really that bad. So this is not what the world perceives or what they think it is. That's the beauty about travelling. Mm. You're learning.
Mm-hmm.
You're educating yourself.
Mm.
Mm-hmm.
So big up those people, but they're brave.
For real. But I think...
just lastly as well... just to end it off,
yeah.
What's next for Black Man A Traveller, and what's the end goal?
So basically, what's next is I'm going to be a father. I won't be making any videos from now until end of the year, September, October times, because I've got enough content to cover until the summer. The way I film, I'm always planning ahead.
Nice.
So if I go to a country for 2 weeks, I make sure I make 2 months worth of content. Just wow. I'm always like targeting in the way I'm strategizing myself. I've learned that from a lot of Nipsey Hussle interviews. So I've got enough videos coming up. I've got African videos, Uganda, Kenya, and Ethiopia. Somaliland,
unfortunately,
but I'm going back. Yeah. So what's next for me is just going to push that out. I'm going to be a father, concentrate on myself. Then, since it comes to September, October, or maybe August, I was planning to go to China. Mm-hmm. But I just discovered that China's moving a bit long with their rules and regulations.
Mm-hmm.
If they change the rules and regulations this year, hopefully inshallah, I'll be in the first back to China, trust me.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to see me there. And when I'm in China, maybe 2 days in Beijing, Shanghai, then the rest is some next area where they're
rural.
Well, when I mean rural, like touching hair, like, yeah. That's the type of
content.
Yeah. If that doesn't happen, then I'm going to do Bangladesh.
Nice.
Do Bangladesh, and then I'm going to do Nepal. Okay. And then next year, I'm going to concentrate on Somalia, Somaliland, Ghana, Nigeria, Uganda, Kenya, Ethiopia, just Africa.
Mm-hmm.
And then outside of Africa, two dangerous countries I want to go to are Haiti.
Mm.
I've got a tour guide over there and I've got some connections. And I think Haiti deserves its recognition. And then maybe Yemen, if things calm down.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe Iran, if things calm down. Because I think those are those three countries, Yemen, Haiti, and Iran, I think... people are scared to go there, which I understand, but those countries have a lot of history.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully the content I make is going to change people's perception.
Yeah. I think Haiti, the only thing I remember is that massive earthquake. That's the only thing you remember from them.
But there's a lot of gang culture there, bro. Yeah. Kidnappings.
Haitians, yeah.
People getting kidnapped just left and right. So. Yeah.
But first and foremost, I want to thank you, bro, for joining us. Honestly, it's been a special episode. And I want to thank everyone else that's been listening in. If you stayed this far along... we appreciate you.
Continue following the journey as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Our journey and the journey of Black Man A Traveller.
Thank you.
Literally traveling everywhere.
Thank you.
But yeah, thank you very much for being here, and good luck with everything you're going to do.
Thank you for, first of all, thank you for waiting for me. I apologize once again. I
got to be a man. Right,
second of all, I want to say you guys big up for your platform. I wish you guys success in the future.
Thank you.
And just, I always say this in whatever interview, I just say, just have three things in life, my bro. Use the time that God gave you, be consistent in whatever you're doing, and have discipline.
Mm-hmm.
If you have those three things, you'll be successful in whatever you want to do.
Mm-hmm.
So I just wish you guys those three things and just have a successful life.
Appreciate that. And I think that's a take-home message for those guys at home as well, bro. So thank you again.